This is Brian Meador from East Carolina University. You are listening to The Sports Objective, the official, unofficial podcast of the Pirates.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast, coming to you on Facebook Live, YouTube, Twitter, and obviously this audio only will be pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. It's hard to believe the college baseball season has come and gone, and we have the championship series left. And right now, I'm joined by my co-host, Kyle Barber. Kyle, how's it going?
What's going on, Bubba? Yes, getting down to the nitty-gritty here. It's the championship series for the College World Series, and in the season will be officially in the bags.
Yeah, it's hard to believe it's that time, but I'm very excited to preview this championship series. And to do that, a guy that we had on to preview the East Carolina Vandy Super Regional, the play-by-play voice on the radio side of things for the Commodores, Kevin Ingram. Kevin, welcome back.
Hey, great to be with you guys. How's it going today?
Doing well. How are things out there in Omaha? Obviously, it's been a very exciting and very interesting College World Series up to this point. So just give us things from a Vandy perspective.
It's been very warm here in Omaha, for one thing. Today's actually a pretty nice day. We got here a couple weeks ago. It was 105 degrees on the Thursday when we first arrived. But the weather, for the most part, has been pretty good. Been a couple weather delays. But, you know, in terms of Vanderbilt's run here, it's been an interesting run, to say the least. Of course, all the stuff that happened with NC State was really, really unfortunate. And I think we all wanted to play the game on Saturday, and unfortunate for the way things worked on Friday with, you know, their short roster. But, you know, it's been a thrill to be here. We played some amazing games, one and two walk-offs, first against Arizona on a hit by Jason Gonzalez, and then won that crazy game against Stafford on a wild pitch and scored two runs in the ninth after the first two were out and two strikes with nobody on base and down by a run and came back and won. So that was a crazy game and a great win to set up another game with NC State after they beat us the first time around back on Monday with the terrific performance by Jack Leiter, but Tatum's home run was the only run of the game. But yeah, it's been a crazy run and seen four very interesting and very different ball games from the Vanderbilt perspective so far.
Before we talk about some of those games that were played, I mean, you mentioned everything that unfortunately took place involving NC State. The Wolfpack were sitting in the driver's seat with that 2-0 mark. And then, you know, they still had obviously a lot to prove because Vandy, with the talent that the Commodores have, could very well battle back out of that hole. But just give us a glimpse behind the scenes from the opposite side of the fence and that – you know, the hours leading into that matchup.
Yeah, we really, you know, as far as the Friday game, we didn't know really much of anything going on. Seen some stuff on Twitter, you know, media reports about potentially some sort of issues with the NC State program. But we kind of sat there thinking that everything, maybe until just about an hour before game time, was going on as planned. And then, you know, you could tell things were going on. We were sort of watching. We could see into the NC State dugout from our broadcast booth. So we were watching their folks and, you know, a couple of huddles and pitchers going out to the bullpen and coming back from the bullpen. And you know, you could tell it was a much smaller group to begin with. But really the thing that got your attention is when you didn't get the lineup, say, 45 minutes or an hour before the game. You usually have the lineup in your hands about an hour before the game starts. You can really put in your preparation. But once we didn't have that and it got to about a half hour or 15 minutes before game time, still no lineup being posted, he knew was not going to start on time. And there were certainly some kind of issues going on. We could watch, you know, what was going on from the Vanderbilt side with, you know, Kamar Rocker delaying his warm-ups to get ready for that game on Friday. You could see different conversations going on with the coaching staff. But it was just a very weird, awkward, surreal sort of day on Friday. You give NC State's guys credit, man. They put a team on the field that was missing four of their starters and had a pitcher playing first base who hadn't batted all season. He goes 3-for-4. It was Sam Heifel, and it was just a strange game. But then, you know, after that, we thought, okay, well, you know, and hearing some of the comments afterwards, maybe NC State gets some guys back. We play on Saturday. Everything will be fine. But then, you know, woke up Saturday morning to the bad news, and I guess that came down in the middle of the night. It was after I was asleep. I didn't know anything about it until I woke up Saturday morning. But yeah, it was been kind of just a strange couple of days, and just unfortunate with the way this whole thing unfolded. We're obviously thrilled to be in the finals, but we'd have all certainly preferred to have played that game against NC State yesterday.
Yeah, no doubt, and that's one of those things that obviously we're East Carolina fans, as you know, and even though we don't care for NC State, that's something you don't wish on anyone because you can relate to them. I cannot imagine if East Carolina was there and having an opportunity like that to compete for a national championship taken away.
Yeah, but, for sure. I was talking to a buddy of mine earlier. We were Andrew Allegretta, we were doing our podcast, and we were both, talking about it from a basketball perspective a couple of years ago, and remembering how everything got shut down. At the time, I was calling basketball games for Belmont University, and our guys had won this thriller against Murray State in the OVC championship, and thinking you're going to the tournament, and all of a sudden that's shut down, and the tournament's canceled, and you don't get that opportunity. So I've kind of seen a little bit of it from both sides of things. I know a different sport and a different tournament, and a different spot in the whole COVID situation. But yeah, definitely sympathize for the people in their program.
So heading into this series with Mississippi State, these two programs, had met back in Nashville during the regular season. I want to say, was it the last week of April or so?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So if I recall correctly, Vandy took two out of those three. So going into this matchup, obviously there's not going to be a ton that's unknown at this point. Not that there would be in any matchup, mm-hmm. but especially an interconference matchup like this. So what are some of the things? I know Vandy hasn't necessarily been clicking on all cylinders offensively, but they found a way to get it done. What are some of the key points that you think are very critical going into tomorrow night and beyond?
Well, the pitching and certainly relief pitching is a big factor for both teams. Mississippi State has the hammer, and Landon Sims is just a beast at the back of their bullpen. You don't want to get to that guy trying to come back in the ninth inning. Vanderbilt's bullpen's been fantastic in this College World Series. I call them the three M's, Chris McIlvain and Luke Murphy and Nick Maldonado. Not always necessarily in that order, but they have all been just lights out. They pitched great. Vanderbilt has needed great efforts out of those guys, certainly in those two walk-off wins. And again on Friday with Murphy coming in and getting out of trouble. So it's the bullpens have been super impressive. I know Mississippi State has more than just Landon Sims, but he's the big name everybody knows. I don't know when we'll see Will Bednar again, who has been a strikeout machine in this College World Series, but he also just pitched in the most recent game for Mississippi State against Texas. By the way, all three of those games between Mississippi State and Texas were great games. Huge fan bases, just great support for both of them. Mississippi State won in the walk-off in the game on Saturday night. But I think for Vanderbilt is, getting the bats going, getting some offense going, just is – been uncharacteristically quiet through a whole lot of this College World Series, and not a game against NC State on Friday, not being able to come up with that big hit to really bust the game open, and of course struggled the first time around against State, the 1-0 loss, just couldn't get the big hit in that game to get just anything on the board. But at times the offense has been good, it's been enough, gotten some home runs, scored some runs in the two victories, but consistent offense out of Vanderbilt is going to be key. I would think you would think the way things line up, we'd see Jack Leiter pitch tomorrow night for Vanderbilt. That certainly gives the Commodores an edge. I'm not sure how Mississippi State will line up its starting pitching just yet, but at this point in the College World Series, you got to try to figure out a way to get this thing to the finish, managing your pitchers the best you can. It's not your normal three-game weekend series in the SEC where you really have the time to line everybody up the way you like in terms of your starters. It's a little different at this point. Rocker just pitched on Friday. At the earliest, I would think we might see him on Wednesday. So those are some things to watch for. This Mississippi State team is just a really veteran group. A lot of these guys have played in multiple College World Series. Tanner Allen's the SEC Player of the Year. Rowdy Jordan sort of gets them going at the top of the lineup. So it's a team that's been there and done that for Mississippi State. Got some younger guys that are making their first College World Series appearances for Vanderbilt, but all that doesn't matter now. It's down to best of three. You win two games and you're the national champion.
One of the things I want to get your perspective on, Kevin, a lot of, whether it's primarily fans, but maybe some media members as well, but especially the fans, you expect people to be frustrated when something happens like what happened with NC State, and I'm not just talking about NC State fans, but just so much frustration. It seems like Vanderbilt has kind of been, you know, the target of some things that some of it is definitely not deserved. Just, you know, anybody that's in that situation, especially a team that won the last championship in 2019, when you're at the top, people are going to take shots at you. So what's your thought on some of that, some of the things that have been said as far as just with everything that went on with NC State, and it seems like Vanderbilt's getting a free ticket to a championship?
Well, from that perspective, any criticism directed toward Vanderbilt in this thing, I think is really unfair and unfounded. Commodore's just kind of right place, wrong time, if you ask me. I mean, Stanford throws one more strike on Wednesday, they win that game, and it's Stanford in this spot playing NC State, and you know that they're put in this situation. Listen, again, as I said it off the top, nobody for Vanderbilt wanted to get here to the finals without playing the required amount of games that you have to play and win to get there. So, I think all that stuff. I've seen criticism of Vanderbilt, and some of the stuff I've seen has just been ridiculous. But this is a very classy program with great coaches who are high character, or the highest character. For Tim Corbin and Scott Brown and all these coaches and players, just a really classy bunch. And I think a lot of that stuff's really unfair. And I know I'm biased. I'm close to the program, but I don't really appreciate some of the things that have been said about Vanderbilt's program over the last couple of days. And again, just these guys had absolutely nothing to do with any of this stuff that NC State experienced. And certainly sympathize with their program. We all wanted to play the games, and any criticism toward Vanderbilt, I don't really get.
Totally agree with you there, but that's something I was interested to get your perspective on. But give us a glimpse for those of us who have not been to Omaha. Just talk about the atmosphere out there, and you know, there's so much going on. You hear the D1 baseball guys talking about the Omaha Village or whatever it's called, the Omaha Experience. With everything, with the different companies putting their products out and so forth. Just give us a glimpse behind the scenes, just the Omaha Experience.
The Omaha Experience is fantastic. We're all super sad they didn't get to play last year because the season got shut down. I think everybody's just been thrilled to be back out here and having this great event. To me, it is right at the top of the list of great sporting events in this country. I've been fortunate over my career and life as a sports fan to go a lot of different stuff. Been to almost all the big stuff, fortunately for me, over the years. And this is absolutely one of my favorite things. I've only been able to come twice. I came out here in 2019 when Vanderbilt won against Michigan. But this is the first time I've really been able to experience it from start to finish. And it's just great. It's a great ballpark. It's a great atmosphere. Everybody here in Omaha really rolls out the red carpet for all the teams, and they make everybody feel like they're super special. And it's just an honor to be here in Omaha, and for me to have a chance to call these games is certainly a dream come true. So yeah, the atmosphere and, you know, all the stuff outside the ballpark. There are a lot of restaurants and bars and things right there close to the ballpark. They're jam packed with fans before and after the games, and you know, some of them never even make it into the ballpark. And it's just been cool to see all the different fan bases and how people have either gotten along or gone at it back and forth. And it's been a lot of fun. You walk around late at night down there by the ballpark. They have some band stages going on, so there's some loud music thumping and that sort of stuff. But it's a great atmosphere, and I highly recommend it. Anybody who loves not just baseball but is a sports fan, you should come out here and experience this at least once, because it is really, really special.
Yeah, I've know folks, several folks that have been. Unfortunately, I never had the opportunity to make the trip myself, but cannot wait to do so. And really looking forward to catching these games the next two or three nights. But as always, we appreciate your time, and we look to. I know you're the sideline reporter for Vandy football, so with football season approaching very quickly, we'll have you back on this fall, I'm sure.
Sounds like a plan. Appreciate it, guys. Anytime.
All right. Thanks, Kevin. Now I'm going to the Mississippi State side of things. So we'd like to welcome in a guy we've had on the show multiple times from Gene's Page, Mississippi State's 24/7 site. Also boots on the ground in Omaha, Steve Robertson. Steve, how are things?
Man, things are well. I apologize if the video quality is not great. It's the Wi-Fi here is not the greatest, but yeah, it's been a wonderful experience. Before we get started, a couple of things that Kevin said I wanted to address. The first thing is, I agree 100% with him about the criticism of Vanderbilt. Now, you could argue they had a pretty easy path to get to the finals. You know, they had obviously the you know, Arizona plays the infield in a double play situation. Vanderbilt takes advantage there. Vanderbilt makes a play to win it, but a coaching faux pas there by Arizona. And then, of course, as he mentioned, Stanford had Javier Vaz down to the final strike. But listen, Vandy didn't give up. They came back and won the ball game. And you know, Vandy didn't have anything to do with vaccinations or anything like that. I want to give you guys a quick story too. I was coming into the tunnel at TD Ameritrade, and we'd already heard that morning there was a problem. We've been hearing rumors for about 24 hours that there was some COVID issues with NC State, and that actually Jarrett had already gone home. But Link Jarrett's son, second baseman from NC State, had already gone home. So there were already some rumors out there. And so I get to the stadium. I've already done radio. We're kind of just kind of getting up to speed. And as I'm walking through the tunnel, security stops me. And it says, hey, you got to stay right here. And so I look up ahead about 20 feet. And there's, you know, three NC State players in full uniform with mask on. And the next thing you know, they're whisking those guys away to a clubhouse and saying, listen, nobody can come out of the clubhouse. These guys are sequestered to this area. It was a very surreal situation. And Jose Torres looked at me. We locked eyes, and I could just see the pain in his eyes, like he just couldn't believe what was happening. It's almost like he was looking at me like, man, can you help me? And, of course, I can't. But it's a sad situation for those guys. But I don't see where Vandy holds any blame in that. You know, there's been some comments made to media and that sort of stuff. Probably wish they'd have had back. But, you know, Vanderbilt didn't pick this path. They just took full advantage of it. But another comment, too, the Mississippi State is not a veteran team. And matter of fact, outside of Rowdy Jordan and Tanner Allen, there's not really anybody in a starting lineup that has any appreciable Omaha experience. This is a team that's got a lot of talent, and it might not be Mississippi State's most talented team, but might be our best team as far as chemistry and leadership we've had in a long time. So I just wanted to kind of get those things addressed before we got too deep into the interview.
Yeah, no doubt that I don't know why anybody would blame Vanderbilt. That's just piling on people wanting somebody to be mad about. People wanting somebody to blame is something to be mad at, and they're blaming the wrong people. One thing you just said, and this is just a generalized question about sending Jarrett home. How did he get home? Did he fly back commercially? Did Link come pick him up? I mean, how did he get home?
Yeah, Link came. From what I understand, Link came and got him. There was some discussion about that yesterday because you can't fly, you know, with a positive COVID test. And
right.
I understand that a private jet was arranged to get the remaining players home, the ones that were in COVID protocol. But I understand Link came and got him, I think, either on Tuesday night or Wednesday morning. And that's what makes this whole thing Thursday a little more perplexing, is like everybody was aware, at least the people that should have been aware were aware, well before game time on Thursday. And so I don't understand why we couldn't get these things handled maybe Wednesday night or whatever, or early Thursday morning, before we had to delay a ball game. And again, I'm not a person that wants to assign motive or blame on anybody, but it certainly could have been handled better.
Yeah, of course it could have. But it just goes back to the whole bigger issue of COVID. I mean, you got a whole stadium full of people, 20,000. I don't know however many people that stadium holds. Not one of them has been tested. Yet they're all in there on top of each other. We've kind of lost the plot here. I mean, it's stupid at this point. The vaccines are available, or they're available. They're out there. If you want to get a vaccination, you can get a vaccination. And if the vaccines work, then what are we worried about? If you choose not to get a vaccine and you get sick, then good on you. That was your decision not to get one. So I just in general in society, I don't understand people's logic. I don't know what we're worried about at this point. I had COVID. Bubba had COVID. It's like I said, if you didn't get a vaccine and you're not going to get a vaccine and you get sick, you get sick.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer in personal accountability, too. It's like, you know, if you don't want to get a vaccine, fine, don't get one. You know, because what I understand, too, is most of the NC State roster was not vaccinated, and it wasn't some political statement. I was told that many of the guys just simply didn't want to deal with any side effects from a vaccine while they were trying to get to Omaha. And that makes perfect sense to me. Everybody says, oh, well, why weren't they vaccinated? Well, you know, I got the vaccine in my second shot. I mean, I was down for a couple of days, just so fatigued. And I'm not a Division I athlete having to go out there and try to go beat ACC pitching and get my team to Omaha. So I can understand the reluctance to do it. But, yeah, it is a very personal decision, and I don't think anybody should pass judgment on each other one way or another. But, you know, the bottom line is there is risk in life, and if you decide you want to go attend an event, you don't want to get vaccinated, if you deal with the consequences if there are any.
Exactly. I mean, and I just don't know. I don't know who they were putting in danger. If they allowed them to play if the other guys are vaccinated, then how are they putting them at danger? And if the other players that aren't vaccinated are in danger, it was their decision also not to get vaccinated. So if they get sick, they get sick.
As far as what you're saying, Kyle, that's something I was going to bring up from NC State. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, because you're there, obviously. But what, there were four state players, NC State players, that is, that had been vaccinated but then still tested positive?
Yeah, that's what they told us. I mean, I don't know how accurate that is. I mean, you know, if you talk to enough people, you can hear whatever you want. But I was told last night that Texas was the only team in the Final Four that was 100% vaccinated, and that Mississippi State and Vanderbilt were not 100%, but we're pretty close. And there's a handful of guys that weren't. And that NC State actually only had a handful of guys that were vaccinated. And again, I don't know how true that is, but at the end of the day, it's their decision. And I think the, you know, the sad part of it is there's a lot of guys that, you know, aren't involved in this at all, but yet they were sent home. And that's just really a sad situation because, you know, those NC State fans, they were all excited thinking it was their year. They're the only undefeated team in bracket one. They have a real chance to get to the College World Series final, and it's taken away from them. And you know, none of those fans signed up for that either, and that's really the unfortunate part of all of it.
Yeah, and just to close it out on this, if I was their AD, their administration, it's not going to happen. But if I was AD and if I was their AD and members of their administration, I would be petitioning the NCAA right now nonstop to be named co-national champions. It's not going to happen. I'd still do it.
Yeah, I think maybe you do that, if nothing else, just to galvanize your fan base. I agree with you. I mean, they're not going to be honored as such. But, you know, maybe there's some publication out there that might do that. You know, maybe it's maybe not even one of our national baseball publications, but maybe there's somebody out there that'll list them as the co-number one.
Yeah, I mean, a la UCF a couple of years ago with the – what was that old poll that was still
– Yeah. And you remember too when
the Matrix or something? Yeah.
Well, Auburn, you know, a few years ago when Tommy Tuberville was still the coach at Auburn, you know, they were left out of the BCS and they won their bowl game. And he made a comment in post game. He said, "Well, I got a subscription to Golf Digest. Maybe they'll name us number one." And then they did. They put Auburn on the cover of Golf Digest and called them national champs. So that's pretty cool too.
Yeah.
But where I was going with talking about four vaccinated players. Or more or less. I mean, if it'll be interesting to see what comes out in these coming weeks about that. Just, you know, with football on the horizon, and I know for East Carolina, Coach Mike Houston said that out of 126 players, 111 at least, if not a few more, have been vaccinated. How are things looking for Mississippi State?
Yeah, they don't give us those numbers, you know, and hopefully when we talk to Mike Leach, maybe he'll give us more information. But Mike is really, you know, protective about this sort of stuff. He doesn't like talk about injuries or anything like that. And so I don't know if they'll make that information public, but I do know there were a lot of guys that took the vaccine, you know, when it was first made available. So, you know, we'll kind of see how things progress. But, you know, it's just one of those things. You think about all the things that we lost, and, you know, a lot of it, to be honest with you, I understand the err on the side of the call of caution, but a lot of it just kind of seemed unnecessary. You know, some of the things like the College World Series is a good example. It's a sport we're playing outside, and even if you want to play with no fans, I think they could have found a way to make that thing work last year.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, it's like Bubba said that, you know, for football, Coach Houston said 111 of our players so far have gotten vaccinated. You said Leach is not releasing that. I'm like you, it's 100% a personal decision and, you know, kind of live and let live. But if I'm a college football player, I'm paying attention to this right now. And I'm probably going to go get my vaccine unless I have a significant political view or I just, you know, just for whatever reason have a concern that I don't want to get it. After seeing this weekend, I'd be going to get vaccinated.
You know, it's one thing, too, that, you know, the thing about the contact tracing, you know, they say if you have the vaccine, you're exempt from contact tracing issues. And that if no other reason, that's a big part of it. But I'll tell you, one thing that I've heard, you know, just talking to some people in the African-American community is, there are some people that are very much against getting the vaccine because of the old Tuskegee experiment, you know, years ago. They're just not very trusting of these government, you know, mandated, you know, vaccinations. So everybody has their own decision to make. And some people have, you know, different reasons for not getting the vaccine. And I certainly respect that. I got vaccinated because, to be honest with you, my girls were just like, you know, Dad, you're the most exposed guy in our family doing all these book signings. You're always on the road covering sports. And So I kind of did it for them, but it was a relief. You know, once I got it, I was like, well, at least maybe I don't have to worry about that. It's one less thing to worry about. But there are other people that are adamantly against it. I respect both sides of the issue, and I wouldn't want somebody trying to tell me I had to go get it, but also somebody that would be critical of me if I did. So, you know, again, I just think we respect each other and live and let live.
Yeah, I'm like you. I got mine just because I am. You can ask Bubba here. If there's one person who can't stand this mess and wants things to go back to normal, he wants to be able to go to concerts and football games, et cetera, it's me. And I just got mine because I want things to go back to normal. They could have told me I had to eat a dead rat. I'd have probably done it, not because I trusted them, just because I want things to go back to normal.
Guys, yeah.
I agree. I enjoy going to shows, too. And I'll be honest with you, that was kind of the motivation for me. I usually go to a concert about once a month, and there was all this talk about, you know, you're not going to be able to buy tickets to shows if you don't get vaccinated. Yeah. That just seems so incredibly over the top, almost like a dictatorship. But you know, at the same time, too, I like to get out and let my hair down a little bit and kind of raise my fist to the gods of rock and you kind of forget who you are for a while and just kind of enjoy being a kid a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Got tickets for Jamie Johnson and Whiskey Myers in a couple weeks. So looking forward to that.
We have Johnny Robertson chiming in on Facebook, guys. He said Vanderbilt definitely does not deserve to be blamed for the position that they find themselves in. However, they are undeniably the beneficiaries of a huge competitive advantage, like Steve and all of us have said. In my opinion, it is an advantage that is so large that it will taint any title that may be awarded. What are your thoughts on that, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, because, you know, basically, you know, Mississippi State had to use another day's worth of arms, you know, and so, well, Vanderbilt gets another day of rest. And yeah, and I think Johnny is exactly right. And he's probably related to me somehow. But the bottom line is this, is, you know, Vanderbilt didn't choose it. But, you know, there are a lot of people that are kind of pointing the finger at them, you know, either you're justly or unjustly. And it's only tainted to me if Vanderbilt wins. You understand what I'm saying? I think because of the fact Mississippi State had to earn their spot here. And while Vanderbilt may not be at blame, they did benefit from it, just like Johnny said. And they didn't have to play baseball yesterday. Mississippi State had to go out there and play 9 stressful innings and win a ball game and burn up their best starter heading into the finals. I mean, if State doesn't play yesterday, then Will Bednar starts in game 1, which is probably a win for Mississippi State. He beat Jack Leiter head-to-head in Nashville. So, you know, Mississippi State has kind of put it at a disadvantage because of the fact that Vanderbilt didn't have to play. You know, maybe they should have brought Stanford back. Let Stanford play that ball game. I mean, I know everybody's kind of learning on the fly here, but it just seems kind of odd that, you know, a team is basically advanced without having to play a game. But it's a difficult decision, and you know, there's enough blame to go around. But at the same time, it's unique circumstances we're living in, and I just don't know if you can judge anybody too harshly here.
No doubt. And kind of moving on and talking some baseball, Kevin Ingram. When we were talking to him a few minutes ago, I know you were backstage and you heard what he said regarding those 3 tremendous ball games between the Bulldogs and the Longhorns. I know these 2 clubs are the Longhorns and then the Bulldogs, that is, they opened the season against one another at an event down there in Texas. So just talk about those 3 games. We'll start off obviously with that first one. What a tremendous matchup that was. With Bednar striking out 15 in 6 innings, and he and Landon Sims combined for, I believe, what was the College World Series record, 21 Ks. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, and what's crazy is Mississippi State entered this year with a 4-5 record against Texas, open up with an 8-3 win over Texas in Arlington. That was during all the freeze and all the craziness. You come down here, and, of course, they're paired up in the bracket. And I told listeners on my show, I really felt like whoever won that first ball game between State and Texas would ultimately play for a national championship, because I believe Texas would not have enough arms in the end to get to the national championship game if they had to go through the loser's bracket. Turns out they were pretty close. They just about proved me wrong, but Mississippi State had more available late. And, yeah, these were epic games. You talk about the Bednar game. Yeah, you know, Texas is a team that's got a lot of swing and miss in the lineup. I mean, they're a launch angle team, the big prospect type looking guys. And so they want to go out there and play a physical brand of baseball. And so that's what Will Bednar is good at. And because of, you know, the velocity and spin rate on his fastball, he was able to get a ton of swing and miss. And Landon Sims kind of cut from the same cloth. And so I think that matchup is really advantageous for Mississippi State. You know, Landon Sims has kind of been their kryptonite. He's pitched in 3 wins against and the Longhorns got 2 wins and a save. And, you know, really that was the thing, too, that kind of got the State in that second game is, you know, just the bullpen kind of let them down. You know, State comes all the way back and ties at 5-5 in the bottom of the 8th. And you think if we get three outs here in top of nine, we score a run, we walk it off, the whole thing's over. You know, at the very least, you get Landon Sims up and close this thing out. But it's two great teams and two great programs. And last night was exactly what the College World Series is supposed to be about. You know, you're not going to have these 10-run rule type ball games here. That's just doesn't happen. The arms are too good. The teams are too good. The coaches are too good. And the fact that it went down to the last swing, I think, says a lot about both teams. And both of these teams, I think, capable of winning a national championship. And to be honest with you, I think probably everybody outside of Nashville and maybe a few Ole Miss fans are going to be rooting for Mississippi State just because, number one, we've never won it. But also, two, there are a lot of people that just don't want Vanderbilt to get another one.
Yeah, that's something. You talk about Mississippi State. I'm not sure where that ranks. You can probably tell me. I know Florida State, the Seminoles, have been 20-plus times and never won one, at least under Mike Martin. But just talk about that with Mississippi State. This is their 12th trip. It's hard to believe, and it just shows you how difficult it is to win the thing with those teams with Palmeiro and Clark.
Yeah, Florida State is the only school that has been to the College World Series more times than Mississippi State without a title. And so we're 1-2. So we're hopeful Mississippi State can kind of get off that list. I mean, that's the one thing that everybody, can kind of gig Mississippi State about them. We got a lot of LSU friends and people like that. And they say, you know what, hey, you guys got that great stadium and these big crowds, but you don't have a national championship. And State people are kind of tired of that being the punchline, And so, but yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, this has been, we've had a great program for a long time. Mississippi State's always been good at baseball. And here's the thing I dug up this week. Mississippi State has had six different coaches lead them to Omaha. That is the most in the Southeastern Conference. And I haven't done the research, but certainly you would expect to be one of the highest in the country. Florida has had four coaches taken, but State had six, starting with Paul Gregory back in the 1970s and Ron Polk in the 80s and Pat McMahon. Then Polk comes back and then Gary Henderson takes them, John Cohen takes them, and now Chris Lemonis. And so there are a lot of programs out there that a coach makes a program. That's not really the case at Mississippi State. This is a program that makes the coach because of the culture here at Mississippi State and the fact that you have such unbelievable fan support, the expectations are so high. And so there's a huge commitment to baseball. And, we just feel like that, maybe this is our time. And it's kind of felt that way, probably for the last couple of months, even when you had that bad showing in Hoover. And that's the thing the casual baseball fan doesn't fully appreciate. Mississippi State had nothing to play for in Hoover, and it showed, and they kind of approached it as a situation to get some guys some work. And you see those scores, and people begin to doubt the team. That's not really who Mississippi State is. It just, they needed to get home and get their pitching ready for the run to Omaha, and it's worked out well.
Yeah, we kind of feel that pain as East Carolina Pirates on a different level. We're Bubba, what is it, 32 trips to the NCAA?
Yeah, 31 and 32 regionals and six super regionals without the trip to Omaha.
And I saw Cliff Godwin's comments, man, and it's heartbreaking. I mean, it is. It's one of those things. If you're a fan of college baseball, and I know you guys are, there is a fraternity among college baseball fans. It's not like football where everybody hates each other. College baseball, we all understand how difficult it is to get to Omaha and how difficult it is to win it. But we also understand how neat the experience is. And you want to share that with everybody. I mean, you really do. You want other people to have a chance to go because Omaha is so spectacular. And there's just something special about watching your team take the field at TD Ameritrade. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm on the Mississippi State side. I shared that video of Cliff when he was crying, says, one day we're going to get there. And, we've been there. We've been in that position. And I know what it means to finally break through and have something special happen. And it's going to happen for ECU. Cliff's too good of a coach. But you see the human side of that when you see a coach thinking about his kids and saying, I just hate it so bad for our kids. And one day we're going to get there. And I firmly believe East Carolina will. But there is this human aspect of it that I think people fully appreciate. Like right now, I go to the mall to go buy some clothes. Even though I packed for 2 weeks, I've run out of clothes. I got one outfit left. And so I went to go buy some clothes rather than to the wash. And there's people at dinner buying meals for NC State fans. Yeah. I mean, there's like Mississippi State people that are like, hey, picking up checks for these people that don't even know. And it's like, that wouldn't happen in football. And, there's just a community in baseball that is special.
Yeah, it's funny you say that about NC State. Obviously, as East Carolina fans, we hate NC State. It would be comparable to Southern Miss of Mississippi State. And I had posted on my Facebook, I am not jumping on the bandwagon. NC State's a local team. I'm not cheering for them. I hope they lose. Can't stand them. You know, just being a jealous fan. And when this happened, I completely changed my tune and said, you know, I feel sorry for them. This shouldn't happen to anybody. It's not fair. No matter what your feelings of the Wolfpack are, fair is fair. And it's like you said, it's in college baseball. Yeah, there's rivalries within states and within conferences, but it's not like in football where it's so cutthroat.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think at the end of the day, when we set aside the rivalries and can kind of see each other as people, you think about what if I had spent thousands of dollars to go to Omaha for a once in a lifetime trip and bring my family, and you get hotels and you put up all that travel, and then you go to the ballpark thinking, okay, we're one win away from playing for a national championship, and you get to the ballpark with your kids and you find out, oh, we're not going to play. I mean, that is absolutely gut-wrenching. I mean, yeah, it's hard for the players, but, you know, there's a lot of fans that spent money they didn't have to get here to come be a part of this thing, and they don't get a chance to see their team compete. And I think that's really unfortunate.
Yeah.
We talked about the three games against the Longhorns. I wanted to talk about that Virginia game. You obviously had 7 1/3 innings, I guess it was. You guys were without a hit. And then, boom, the eighth inning happened, a six spot thrown up on the board. Just give us a glimpse back of that game on what it was like there on the scene.
Yeah, Griff McGarry was outstanding. You know, and he's a guy that has major league stuff, but for some reason he struggled with control, but he's been really hot in the postseason. You know, he had a great game there in a regional and a super regional, and really pitched a game of his life against Mississippi State. They probably stayed with him a little bit too long. You could tell, you know, that next time through the order that State was starting to get some loud outs and get some solid contact. And, you know, I just don't think he had the same, you know, sink on his fastball there. And lo and behold, you get a 2-run shot from Kellum Clark. And it was incredible how everything in the stadium changed. It's like State was absolutely dead. The crowd was dead. When that ball leaves the yard, it was like even though State was trailing, they had the momentum. And next thing you know, when Tanner Allen steps into the box with two men on, I don't think there was anybody in the stadium that didn't think he was going to come through. I don't know who – maybe most didn't expect a home run. But that's our guy. Tanner Allen is our guy. And then there's nobody in the world we'd rather have up at the plate in that situation other than him. And he came through. And I tweeted out right before he hit. I said, these are the moments in which legacies are built. And, you know, this is a guy that's been to Omaha twice. He's always come up a little bit short. And he and Rowdy Jordan, you know, they did something that Clark and Palmeiro didn't do. That's nothing Jake Mangum and Brent Rooker did. And that's they went to Omaha three consecutive times. First time in program history it's happened. And so there's just something special about, you know, the leadership and especially Tanner Allen, the SEC Player of the Year. But when that ball left the yard, I don't think there was any doubt that State was going to win the ball game. And then Scotty DeBrule, grad transfer, comes up and knocks in an insurance run that proves to be the winning run. But I think at that point, people begin to think, you know, maybe we're a team of destiny.
Earlier, Steve, you know, you were talking about that previous matchup between the Bulldogs and Commodores up in Nashville. And you referenced the pitching matchup between Leiter and Bednar. If you would, talk about how you see things and how each team, from your perspective, is going to be able to line up their pitching going into these next two or three games.
Well, you know, Kevin would probably know better than me, but I've been told for a couple of days that the Vandy pitching rotation is going to be Leiter, Riley, and then Rocker. They'll see how far he can go. You know, State wins that Monday game. I wouldn't be surprised to see Rocker try to throw a little bit on Tuesday. You know, we'll kind of see how that progresses. But State is going to throw Christian McLeod on Monday. That was announced earlier today, and we've expected that. We kind of had a rough outing against Virginia, but you know, for some reason, they were kind of on that breaking ball a little more than they should have been. Maybe that's some good advanced scouting. Maybe they stole the signals. Who knows? And I'm not against that kind of stuff. That's part of baseball. But you know, Christian didn't have his best outing. I know that he is hungry and eager to get back on the mound. And you know, this is a guy that was State's ace most of the year, so he's certainly capable of putting up some good numbers. Matter of fact, the first time through the order in that Friday game at Nashville, he struck out 7 of the first 9 guys he saw. So he certainly is an advantageous matchup for State, provided he doesn't walk people. That's what tends to happen with him. He has that one inning where you begin to have some hiccups there. Sometimes he pushes through it, and sometimes it gets the better of him. But he's well-rested. He's good to go. And talking to him today, it seems like his mind is right. I think he's eager to have the baseball. And I think when you see a guy, your friend, like Will Bednar, go out there and perform at a high level. I think it really challenges you a little bit and kind of stirs up those competitive juices. And outside of that, we don't know the order. We do feel like Houston Harding will come back and throw, I would say, probably on Tuesday, and then they'll figure it out from there. I would not rule out Will Bednar making an appearance, you know, maybe even in a closing type role on Tuesday. You know, I just don't know what his availability is going to be. And, of course, with him pitching yesterday, you don't want to try a guy out there just on short rest. But, you know, it's a national championship, and I know Will Bednar will want the baseball really no matter what shape he's in because he is such a competitor.
One of the things, looking back at those first three games, just, you know, very broadly, but just seeing that there was 8 runs, 11 runs, and 11 runs, you know, with the type of arms that those two clubs have, and obviously they have excellent bats as well, but in very, very diverse offenses. But just seeing that many runs with that, with those caliber arms, surprised me a little bit.
Well, you know, that's the thing. You know, State got after Leiter a little bit, and Rocker got after State a little bit. Then you got into that Sunday game, and you kind of got to figure some things out. State gets a big lead early on. Next thing you know, you make some errors, and you let Vandy back in the ball game, and they got a great relief effort from a kid, and then they turned it over to Maldonado, and that was a game. But there are a lot of Mississippi State folks who feel like State blew that thing on Sunday. They felt they should have won the series in Nashville. I know the Mississippi State players feel the same way. I know they've been eager to get a chance at redemption, and now they get to do it on the biggest stage in all of college baseball.
Steve, as always, we appreciate your time. But before we wrap this up, you know, we've already referenced football a little bit. You know, give us a glimpse of going into this year for Mike Leach. Obviously, I've heard from afar, you know, that things are trending up. Give us a glimpse from someone who's right there in Starkville.
Yeah, I mean, the staff seems to be a lot more confident. I mean, I think a lot of it, too, is just having spring practice. Kind of gives you a better handle of who your team is and what they can do. And, you know, Leach is a guy that obviously is big on repetitions. I mean, they're just going to – you know, they don't do a lot of things. But what they do over and over again. They want to do it better than you do it. And so they had the spring to kind of get a lot of those reps in. Will Rogers is being challenged a little bit by former Southern Miss quarterback Jack Abraham. But I do believe Will holds on to the spot there. But – you know, State signed a great receiver class. You had Makai Polk transfer in, Green transfer in from Texas to kind of shore up the secondary. And so they've got some newcomers they expect to be difference makers. State will be a solid bowl team this year. I think probably end up in a Tennessee bowl somewhere, maybe a 7-5, 8-4 type year. And, you know, Mike Leach always upsets somebody he's not supposed to. That's kind of who he is. But I think they'll be a good team this year. And I think in 2022 they got a chance to be a great team.
Kyle, did you want to chime in while we're talking a little football?
Curious to know what your non-conference schedule is, Steve.
Well, let me think here for a second. We have Louisiana Tech and Memphis, NC State, and then an FCS game. And we'll get NC State at our place. We do travel to Memphis. So it's a manageable non-conference schedule, but it's not a, you know, there's not a lot of cakewalks in there. I mean, you get your FCS game in there, and I think that's Alabama A&M, I think. But NC State coming in is not going to be any joke. And it's one thing, too, you look at with this, what's happened here in Omaha. You know, a lot of our fans have taken social media to offer their support for NC State folks. And it's like, you know, now we're kind of excited about our friends coming to Starkville so we can kind of show them around our place, you know. And so that's kind of a cool thing, too, that I think that through all of this, these two programs have gotten a little bit closer. Now, when they get down here, we expect to beat the Wolfpack in football for sure. But it is kind of ironic to think that we're up here in Omaha together and kind of brothers in arms over this whole thing, and then we're going to play football here in a couple months.
Yeah, no doubt. And, good luck against the Wolfpack. We always like to see Wolfpack get beat on the gridiron.
Yeah, we appreciate your support, Kyle.
No problem.
Steve, before we let you plug, you know, your podcast and a website, Johnny Gardner chimes in and said that he had told me this before, but that you're always a great guest and you bring an interesting perspective, and the State fan base is very fortunate to have you.
Johnny, that's very nice for you to say. I appreciate that. I work really hard. You know, I grew up a Mississippi State fan, and, you know, when I first decided to go into writing full time, you know, I went to college to be a writer and was going to get a degree in English. And I just wanted to be a professional writer. I didn't know that it was going to be sports. I love sports. And I think at some point we all get cut, right? And you want to stay connected to the game as much as you can. And so I had a chance to work in sports writing on a part-time basis. And then when I got a chance to be a full-time writer, I wanted to be a Mississippi State writer. And then I wanted to be the Mississippi State writer. And I believe I've accomplished that, but I'm still working to get better. You know, I've written 4 books now, and you know, we have jeanspage.com website. And, you know, we're not just fans of Mississippi State. You know, we're fans of college athletics. As a matter of fact, I rarely ever watch any pro sports unless it's NFL. But, you know, we love the passion of college sports, and there's just such a respect, I think, for those of us that kind of see the game the same way that, you know, you look at these kids and, you know, they choose you. You don't always choose them. And the fact they've become part of your family, I think, is an amazing thing. But I do appreciate the compliment, and I work really hard to produce the best content available for Mississippi State folks. And I know that you guys do the same thing for your people. And that's one of the reasons I always enjoy coming on the show, because you guys aren't just ECU guys. You're fans of college athletics.
Steve, if you would, tell folks about your podcast and how they can listen. I know it's called The Boneyard, a name that we're fond of here in Greenville.
Yeah, it's The Boneyard. You can find it on iTunes and Spotify and all other places podcasts are found. And you can find my books at alphadogsthebook.com. And, of course, our content at jeanspage.com. We're the Mississippi State affiliate for 247 Sports.
As always, Steve, we appreciate your time. We appreciate you joining us from out there in Omaha. Obviously very busy, but enjoy these next few days. And, you know, best of luck as the Bulldogs seek to bring home that first CWS title.
Okay, thank you guys so much.
So his podcast is called the Boneyard Podcast, just like some other people call their podcast, Bubba?
Indeed. The Boneyard – sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
But, you know, so much is going on. Speaking of the Boneyard, hopefully the Boneyard will be full of East Carolina students here in a couple months, a little over 2 months from now. And this weekend, a lot has been going on, big recruiting month, even bigger than usual with everything that's going on. You know, you had a dead period for over a year where recruits cannot come on campus. And it seems as though Mike Houston and this coaching staff has really been able to capitalize.
Yeah, big weekend. Must have been a lot of pretty girls on campus or something. We had 3 commitments this weekend, Bubba. It was the 3 at last count, and a couple of big linemen. Lampley is the one that's really got me excited. Kid that, you know, had some ACC offers. Duke was on him pretty hard. The wide receiver from Georgia. We have a kid, another lineman from, was it West Craven? Is that where the other lineman is from?
Yeah, this information is coming from hoistthecolors.net. Steve and I go, obviously, any East Carolina fan is probably well aware of him, does an excellent job of covering things. But, you know, looking at it now, we have 9 commitments overall this weekend. I was looking at it, it's at least 4 or 5. You mentioned J.D. Lampley, 6, depending on where you look, you know, the heights are going to vary, but he's 6'3 or 6'4, 290 or 95 pounds. And there's actually a picture of him on Twitter as a pitcher in baseball. So that's obviously pretty imposing on the mound to see a guy of his stature.
Yeah, Lampley is a guy that, to me, physically, you know, and I know Duke came on him kind of late. I kind of expect with his frame, if he has a big fall, I wouldn't be surprised if we're going to have to keep recruiting him. I wouldn't be surprised to see some other people come on him as the season goes and try to flip him. I don't think the recruitment is done on him just yet, but we got him right now.
Yeah, you take a look at some of his offers. He had an offer from South Carolina, obviously our game 2 opponent. And then you mentioned Duke. And then in addition to those, you have the academies that offered him. I think he has a 4.38 GPA, which really jumped out at me. And
Coastal.
Yeah, Coastal Carolina. They offered, and he actually visited them on June 18th, and just before he came to Greenville. And you take a look at it from with Lampley, one of the things that jump off the page of me and you know, seeing a picture of him is he doesn't appear to have much loose weight. He's pretty chiseled for a guy that's 290 pounds.
Yeah, particularly at high school. And, you know, he hadn't worked with a Division I, you know, strength program. And to have that kind of body coming out of high school or going into your senior year of high school is pretty impressive.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, going back to some of the others that have committed this weekend, like I said, 9 commitments overall. Caleb Webb, he's the wide receiver out of Georgia that you referenced, about 6'3", 190 pounds. I think he had been in camp, as I'm sure most, if not all of these guys have. And so he ran something like a 4.4 and a tremendous size and speed, athleticism.
Yeah, I believe he's the kid, Bubba, that the coaches came on him out of some camp at Wake Forest that had multiple Division I schools there. And that's how we came on him from what I read. And, yeah, I believe his offer list was, if I remember correctly, FIU and a few other FBS programs. But kid with a lot of size, a lot of speed.
Another guy that committed today on June 27th, C.J. Mims, like you mentioned, out of West Craven, Vanceboro. He's a guy, and he's one of those that may be getting overlooked by some folks just because he's only 6'1", but kind of a not quite as heavy as the Swamp Monster, obviously, at 295 pounds, but 6'1", 295. He's a guy, I know North Carolina has been on him pretty heavily, and it's huge to get a guy from Eastern North Carolina to at least right now, it appears as though he will stay at home.
Yeah, North Carolina's been recruiting him. I don't know how many other offers he's gotten, but he as of right now is a Pirate, and we're just gonna have to keep recruiting these guys like that. The D line are always at a premium, and whenever you get a quality D lineman committed, you're gonna have to keep recruiting them because somebody's gonna try to flip him. And this staff's doing a really good job recruiting linemen on the defensive linemen and offensive linemen, which bodes well for the future. I mean, they're just going to keep adding depth on the line and in the trenches. And eventually that's going to pay off. You know, how soon it'll pay off, whether it'll be this year or next year, it will eventually pay off. When you bring in quality linemen and you just continue adding layers of depth on the line, it is going to eventually pay off. There's just no way it won't.
Like Lampley, he did have, he being Mims, C.J. Mims did have an offer from Duke. Look at it, Liberty, Navy, Army. So I like to see these guys that have these offers and appointments from the academies because that tells me that they're in a pretty good position academically for the most part.
But we're going head to head with Duke more than I've ever seen it. I don't know if that necessarily is good or bad. It's certainly good in terms of the quality of the young man in terms of his grades. There's another kid that we haven't got committed yet who's a running back that we're offering as a running back. Duke is going after hard as a corner. From what I read, giving out some of Igo's inside information on Hoist the Colors, you got to subscribe if you want to get this information before I tell you. But he had breakfast yesterday morning with Coach Cutcliffe. So Cut wants this kid hard, but he's in Greenville right now. We're offering him as a running back. Duke's offering him as a corner. So we are going head-to-head with Duke an unusual amount this year.
Another guy we've referenced a couple times already, how we really like what this staff's doing as far as building some depth in the trenches on something that's been missing. Glaring deficiency in recent years, for sure. Ethan Lang out of IMG Academy down in Bradenton, Florida, 6'3", 318. I believe that he has some offers like Marshall, Arkansas State, Buffalo. So some people will – the diehard college football fan realizes how good those three programs have been in recent years, and he certainly has, I think – between 15 and 20 offers overall.
Yeah, those are good offers. And those are hard offers. Marshall, you're talking about year in, year out, Conference USA contender. Arkansas State, one of the best programs in the Sun Belt. Buffalo has been one of the best programs in the MAC recently. So, they're while they're not Power 5 offers, they are really good offers. And glad to have them on board.
And I believe those are the four that we've gotten this weekend. I don't think I'm skipping over anybody. And again, 9 overall. One that I really like to see. I've been needing some edge rushers, some athleticism to put heat on the opposing quarterback. And Jamarion Franklin out of Lake City, South Carolina, 6'5", 230 pounds. So very excited what he can bring in the years to come.
Yeah, no doubt. And you know how many scholarships we have to offer this year?
Well, this is something we'll ask Coach Houston when we have him on. I think it, I want to say, I don't recall if it was the podcast he did with Coach Houston or maybe when he was on Pirate Radio, but I want to say he was saying that it'll be essentially a full class, so right there around 25.
Okay, gotcha.
But another offensive lineman that we haven't mentioned, or a couple of them, Omari Allen out of Henderson, North Carolina, Vance County High School, and Elisha Samples from Cumming, Georgia, North Forsyth. Down there they pronounce it Forsyth instead of Forsyth, like in North Carolina, but those two, Samples and Allen, 6'4", 270 and 6'5", 315.
Yeah, and you mentioned there another North Carolina kid. Last year that was a little bit of my concern, and we didn't have very many in-state kids. That trend appears to be headed in the right direction with in-state recruits.
And lastly, some skill guys. These guys have been committed for, a week or more now. Brock Spalding, he's somebody that we've really been targeted for an awfully long time at wideout, 5'11", 180 pounds. He's out of Virginia. And I don't recall his brother's name, but I want to say he maybe initially went to Virginia Tech and then transferred somewhere else. I know Johnny's more familiar with him, Johnny Gardner. He can chime in with that information. But Brock Spalding, very talented wide receiver. And then we also got a JUCO DB from Lewisburg. And it's a guy that's like 6'3", 6'4", very much like DJ Ford, who transferred in from North Carolina.
Yeah, always good to add depth on the back end of your defense, too. You got to have your linemen, but you got to have somebody to defend the back end. And good heights like that is always a problem for receivers.
And that is Siobhan, I'm guessing it's Revel. It's either Revel or Revel, R-E-V-E-L. Siobhan Revel from Lewisburg Junior College, excited to have him on board. So 9 commitments thus far, 4 from North Carolina, 2 from Georgia, and then 1 each from Florida, South Carolina, and Virginia.
Yeah, that's that to me is more like what it should look like, Bubba. It's where your majority of your kids are in state, and then you're hitting your surrounding area.
Yeah, and this staff obviously very experienced within this region, and who knows, maybe we would still be getting these commitments in state even if we had not finished last season as strong. But when you dominate SMU, especially that first half, 45-7, and guys see the excitement on the sideline. I know DJ Ford, when he transferred over from North Carolina, was just talking about how appealing that was to him, seeing the excitement and energy with which a Mike Houston team plays. And not only that, but taking a look at it from just the angle where you're getting guys from, because not only did you have that game, but it's just an overall more competitive.
There's an upward projection. More competitive for our program. Yeah, there's an upward projection for our program, and if these guys watched East Carolina football last year. With the exception of the Cincinnati game, we played good football really all year last year after the Georgia State game. The Georgia State game was kind of an anomaly. Some weird things happened. After that, we played good football. And even that Cincinnati game, that had more to do with Cincinnati than it did us.
Absolutely. Johnny chimed in. He's talking about Ethan, our offensive line commit from the IMG Academy. Excellent point with the type of talent that's down there at IMG Academy, even in practice every day. He's going up against some tremendous talent. And Dylan Spalding was the one I was referencing. He transferred to Illinois from Virginia Tech.
Illinois with their brand new offensive coordinator.
Tony Peterson.
I was about to say Tony Franklin. Tony Peterson.
Yeah, but Tony Franklin, he was
office coordinator at Middle Tennessee, Middle Tennessee, several different places. I always liked his offense.
Yeah, certainly a household name. One that's been around for a long, long time and had a lot of success with Rick Stockstill and otherwise. But before we wrap this up, do you have anything else, Kyle?
No, I just you know, excited about the commitments and need to keep picking them up. And yes, we're sitting here now. I guess if you want to call this weekend over, we're 9 weekends away from college football season.
Yeah, we'll continue to obviously talk college football over these next couple months leading into the season. If you missed our interview with Blake Carroll, definitely go back and check that out. It's on our YouTube channel as well as Facebook and pretty much anywhere our podcast is found. So definitely do that. We'll have coaches continuing to come on and have a conversation with us here in the next few weeks. I know we'll try to knock out the coordinators first this week. We're going to try to get Tim Dowse. That's not set in stone yet, but probably by the middle of the week, if not before, we'll have new special teams coordinator, outside linebacker, and defensive ends coach Tim Dowse, who has an awful lot of experience, and he's a guy that has been a defensive coordinator at multiple stops as well as a special teams coordinator at Syracuse.
Yeah, good add to the staff. I think overall, Coach Houston did a good job replacing some coaches this year. Really his first time he's had to do that since he's been here. And I think he, you could argue, made upgrades across the board.
Here in a couple weeks, we'll have Donnie Kirkpatrick, obviously no stranger to Pirate Nation. And Donnie K will be on middle of July. And then we'll mix in a few of the position coaches as well, especially those who are newcomers to the program.
Yeah, and I guess technically, Bubba, we have a passing game coordinator. Is that right?
We do. Coach Latrell Scott coming over, a former head coach at Norfolk State, and someone that Coach Houston had a prior relationship with.
Yeah, I want to know how much – it'd be interesting to ask Donnie how much input he's having on the offense with the passing game coordinating title, a guy who left the position as a head coach in an FCS school to come join our staff.
Yeah, for sure. From everything I gathered, he's certainly a bright mind in terms of the passing game, and very excited to have him on board. I'm looking forward to hopefully having him on the show. And then in addition to East Carolina football, we'll be joined from play-by-play voices or maybe even head coaches from this year's opponents. We'll talk to Adam Witten, play-by-play voice from App State. We may even have Sean Clark on, head coach of the Mountaineers at some point. And then we'll continue to do the same moving forward with South Carolina and so on, be it a play-by-play voice, beat writer, or coach.
Sounds good, Bubba. Looking forward to it as we get ready for college football 2021. And hopefully things continue to trend in the right direction and it's 100% normal, and we don't have to deal with any nonsense.
No doubt. Fingers crossed that we'll be able to have a normal college football season, and it won't be anything like what we've seen the last few days in Omaha with NC State. Hearts go out to that and those guys. It's a shame that they couldn't compete for national championship like what they earned. Don't wish that on anybody, but appreciate everyone tuning in. Really appreciate Steve Robertson from James Page, Mississippi State 24/7 site, as well as Vandy Radio play-by-play voice on the baseball side and also football sideline reporter Kevin Ingram join us. That's a name that's obviously very, very well-known to a longtime Pirate fans, former quarterback of the Pirates back in the Ed Emery era, Kevin Ingram. But appreciate those gentlemen's time and really look forward to all the content we have coming up. Be sure to follow us on social media on Twitter at TheSportsOBJ, on Instagram at The Sports Objective, and like and follow us on Facebook, and, of course, subscribe to our YouTube channel. For Kyle Barber and the absent Dave Richmond, I'm Bob Rosenbaum, and you've been listening to The Sports Objective Podcast. Enjoy your weekend, everyone.